I think the last time that CSN, which we were at the time was CSNY, played a couple of gigs, I think in 70... What year was that? A long time ago, long time ago. And we played Wembley Stadium, of course, in 74.
How are the songs going down? Because, of course, you go back about, 14 years now, and I wonder, you've got several generations of people that are actually coming to see you, those that followed you in the early 70s and those that have picked up your music in the in more recent years.
We have found that most of the audience can sing the words to the songs, you know, because that's something we check on, of course, as soon as we get out there and start singing, is, you know, is anybody out there singing the words? Because once you see the people singing the words, then you know that there's not going to be much communication problem. Every single gig, they've known all the words. We've had all the German audiences singing No More War with Military Madness. We've had them all singing Teach Your Children, Southern Cross. They do okay. Of course, those may have been the smattering of American and English kids, you know, in the audiences. But we've had no problem whatsoever.
Picking up on what you said about Teach Your Children and also Our House, they're two very favourite songs from earlier Crosby, Stills, Nash albums. What's the reaction to those songs? Do they really know the words that well, and do they know what they're about?
I believe so. I believe that... especially in the case of Teach Your Children, we haven't done Our House yet at all. It's that's one of the songs that, you know, I mean, we just can't do everything, you know. If we'd do everything, we'd still be playing the first show. I believe they know the words to the songs, yeah. I really do.
Well, as you're going through the concerts here in Europe and including British dates, you've released a live album, Allies. Now, this is the first Crosby, Stills and Nash live album, although you released one with Neil Young.
That's right. That was Four Way Street many years ago. We wanted to show people that we could... Four Way Street was a strange album. A lot of people think that we were very lax on that album, and it wasn't that way at all. We put a tremendous amount of work in it, but we'd made a decision not to do any overdubs, not to correct mistakes, not to to re-sing some vocals that were obviously flat and out of tune and stuff. And I think that's where we made a big mistake.
One of the unusual songs on the album is Blackbird, which is the Lennon and McCartney song. Why did you decide to choose that song? I know you always include on your album songs by other artists as well as yourselves.
It meant a great deal to me and David and Stephen personally. When we were putting the first CSN album together in 1968 in London, we'd already got a great arrangement of Blackbird, and we've been doing it for 14 years. We've never put it on record, and we decided to this time.
It's been some time since Four Way Street, the last live album with Neil Young. Why did you choose to release a live album now, in 1983?
We wanted to spearhead the European tour. We actually made Allies for Europe, rather than, I know it's going to be released in America, obviously, as a live album too, but we wanted a brand new album for Europe, and that's the reason why. We played some really fine music on the last two American tours, which maybe 90% of the material comes from. So we wanted to bring out an album ahead of our European tour.
I'd like you now, if you will, to talk about a couple of specific tracks of the album. One is the track by the song that was written by Joni Mitchell, He Played Real Good for Free.
That was something that David decided to do a long time ago. It was recorded in Houston in 1977. It's a beautiful song. It's very applicable to the way we run our lives, you know, that we have done many, many free concerts, and we've also been paid tremendous fortunes for doing concerts too. We're always stuck in that middle ground, you know, I mean, of being you know, common people, you know, that have much money and people that have done a tremendous amount of fundraising especially for environmental and anti-nuke causes.
You certainly have a lot of empathy with Joni Mitchell and others of her ilk, don't you?
Yes, well, we love Joan, you know. It's she's been woven in and out of our history, and we've been woven in and out of her history from the very beginning.
The second of the two songs that I wanted you to highlight from the live album is For What It's Worth, which was originally released 15 years ago by Buffalo Springfield. It's also the first single release from the live album. How relevant do you think that song is today, and what do you feel about it?
I think it's very relevant. I think most of the feelings that we've been writing about throughout our history as a group have been feelings that are timeless. We really do have to stop and take a look around and figure out what the hell is going on here. We have always, with our music, tried to make people more aware that there are certain problems in living that must be faced. For what it's worth, it was a song that was written by Stephen for the Buffalo Springfield in 1965. And today is still terribly relevant. You know, we have to stop and take a look around at what's going on with the nuclear arms race, what's going on with the pollution on the planet, what's going on with the poisoning of the water, of the air, you know, of the very food we eat. It's still terribly relevant.
Aside from your feelings about the environment, the nuclear power situation, both from the point of energy and the way in which it's used for missiles, for deterrence, etc., you've also made comments in the past on your albums with songs like Ohio. I know it's a question that's been asked of you before about the police state or the way that students have been dealt with rather badly.
Yes.
Do you still feel that strongly?
Absolutely. I mean, only while we were in Paris last week, there were student riots. Exactly the same. You see, it's the intelligentsia of the people that seem to pick up on the problems first. And whenever I see student unrest, I know that something very deep is going on here. Because when I went to school, I'm sure when you went to school, we had no idea that you could riot at school. That's ridiculous, right? But there are students who are very bright, who do see public and personal problems that are definitely worth speaking about. And like I said, if they're rioting in Paris as we speak, Ohio is not very far around the corner.
Do you think your message is coming across better or worse today? Going back to the 60s, it was very much in vogue to write protest songs. Donovan was doing it, Don McLean was doing it, you were doing it. Indeed, John Lennon was writing protest songs. They were called protest songs now. Now, today, the climate, the political climate in the world has changed. Do you still think it's efficient?
It may have changed here, but it certainly has not changed in America. What the difference that you pointed out so well is that during the 60s, when people were experimenting with drugs, you know, they were expanding their consciousness at the same time as finally coming to be aware of all the social problems, you know. So I would say that our points got across better then. But it doesn't mean that they are not alive and thriving today. I see the same hope in the kids' faces that they can take care of their future. They can take their future into their own hands. You know, we've always always wanted to not just be a pop group. We always wanted to have our music mean something. You know, all our songs have a reason for being. They have a very definite point. Ohio is a very good case in point. When Neil saw those four guys get shot down for children by the that's not a political song to me. That's a song of outrage. When I wrote Chicago about Bobby Seale being bound and chained and gagged, that's not a political song. It was a song that was a protest against something that was happening within the political system, but it was not. It was more outrage than politics.
Well, let's move away from those kind of social commentaries, whichever way you want to put them. And talk now about the live band. Now, obviously, there's Crosby, Stills and Nash, the three front people in the band that sing the harmonies and play guitars. But on the live album, you've got people like Jeff Porcaro from Toto helping you out on some of the live tracks. Are they included in the tour that's currently on in Europe?
In Porcaro's case, no. What happened is that the live band for the last tour in America was Joe Vitale on drums, Chocolate Perry on bass, Michael Finnegan on organs, James Newton Howard on keyboards, Efrain Toro on percussion, Michael Sturgis on guitar, and the three of us. Porcaro only played on the two studio tracks that are on the live album, War Games and Raise a Voice. In this band now, we have replaced Vitale and George Perry with Kenny Passarelli and Rick Jagger, who plays a lot with David Mason. And we have replaced James Newton Howard on keyboards with Kim Bullard from Poco.
And how is that all working out? I mean, you've got so much material to glean
that
from.
That is in between trying to... We never want our music to be perfect. I don't like perfect music. You know, I've very rarely heard perfect music as it happens. I always like to leave something to chance, you know. And the need to experiment and not play the same song the same way twice is very important to me. That's the way that we can sing Teach Your Children for the 4,000th time, because it's always different, you know. We always want to be flexible in our music. I don't want to be the Eagles who played the same show for 50 nights in a row with exactly the same solos and exactly the same breaks. I don't want to do that.
You mentioned just a while ago the two studio-produced tracks on the album. Now, how did they come about? They're new songs, aren't they?
There is a movie out now in America. In fact, it's probably out here in Europe too, called War Games. And when it was in its final editing stage, the director called Stephen and I to write some music for it. And Stephen wrote War Games, and I, with Stephen's help, wrote Raise a Voice. And 2 days before the movie came out, the studio had changed hands, and the head of the studio took the songs out. And so we were really angry, because the War Games movie really speaks to part of the paralytic process that goes on when you instill in your children the fact that there may not be a future. You know, there was a study done several years ago in Connecticut of 1,000 children, and about 78% of them didn't believe they would make it to the age of 18. So when you instill that kind of a mind process in your kids, they don't want to educate in what for. They don't want to get a job, what for. They don't want to get married, have kids, what for. We're all going to be gone in 5 years, you know. So we wanted to really be a part of that movie. And when the songs were taken out, we played around with the idea that maybe we could include them on a live album. And we seem to have done so successfully.
In the last 14 years, Crosby, Stills and Nash have walked a similar musical path, but there have been times when you've taken a diversion and you've split away from each other. I wonder what you see the differences are between the music of Crosby, Stills and Nash today and that of the band in the early days, 14 years ago.
Well, there are obvious musical differences. You know, you get influenced by lots of people. You know, you get, you know, the technology gets better, the instrumentation gets better. We now use more synthesizers than we did then. But the basic core of the music is still the same. I want to write a song that can affect you personally. When I write a song about a problem I'm going through with my loved one, say, for instance, you can sit there and go, wow, I know exactly what he means. Wow, that makes me think about my situation differently. We've always tried to shorten the distance between people. We've always tried to make people less lonely, and we've always tried to give the people hope that they can do something about their future.
Has the actual musical side of the harmonies changed? Do you write differently now? Do you, for example, write a song on your own, Graham, and then adapt it for the rest of the guys in the band?
That's how it always was. Only on a couple of specific instances can I remember writing a song deliberately for the four-three-part harmony. The last one I did was Wasted on the Way, which was on Daylight Again album. I wrote that specifically for me, David and Stephen, to sing acoustically with three harmony voices. Normally, I write every song for me. I write every song personally, you know, and then we adapt it to fit. If I'm working with David, then we'll adapt it to fit David and I. And if we're working with Stephen and Neil, we'll adapt it that way.
Speaking about Neil, now, I understand that he declined to join you on this tour, preferring perhaps to pursue his own solo career.
I don't believe Neil was ever asked. I don't think he was even invited. He's been wrapped up for the last 4 years in a movie that he's been doing. And I'm not so sure that he can... He can tolerate the scene that goes on around David and Stephen and I. It's not the most stable of scenes. You know, there's a lot of bullshit that goes around. There's a lot of madness. There's a lot of fine music. It's very unstable. This chemical equation that we have here can fly off the handle at any moment. And although it's kind of jittery, you know, being around that energy, some really fine music comes out of it. And I've learned to appreciate over the years that maybe this is the way it must be for us, you know. But it's incredibly volatile. It could just explode in our faces.
I'd like to talk to you in a minute about the Hollies and the reunion that's about to happen in America. You've got a live album out, I understand. But before I talk about that, given that you have said to yourself, I'd like to go back in with Alan and the rest of the boys in the Hollies, I wonder whether Stephen Stills is equally interested in, say, reforming Buffalo Springfield.
That's an interesting question. I know that Stephen doesn't like the fact that the Hollies exist. I know he doesn't like the fact that the Hollies have a hit right now, because that means that I'm going to work with them, and if I work with them, I won't be working with him. I rejoined the Hollies purely because of the music. I certainly don't need the hassle. I certainly don't need the extra time and drain away from my own creative processes and my family. I certainly don't need the money. It's purely because I heard an album there that was a fun album to make. I think the Hollies album is a great album. I've enjoyed it tremendously, and so I always wanted the Hollies to have a really fine American album, and we never did. And I believe that this time we may have gotten one.
How did the reunion come about? Was it a phone call?
Yeah, I was sitting in my house in Hawaii, and Tony Hicks called and said that there's the 20th anniversary of Top of the Pops, something like that, some ridiculous number. Mm-hmm. And the Hollies and I had done the very first Top of the Pops with Jimmy Savile, and they had a hit right then with one of those Stars on 45 records, and Top of the Pops called and said, listen, you want to come do the show, but you know, we'd like you to bring the original band and get them back together. So Tony called me, and I thought about it for 10 minutes, and I called him back and I said, sure. Sounds like a good idea. So we went back there, and then the day after, we went to Abbey Road, which is where we recorded all our records. And they were in the middle of making a Hollies record without me. And I couldn't help but not sing, you know. So I ended up singing on a couple of records. It sounded great. We decided that if it could be this easy and this much fun, then there was no reason why we couldn't make an album if we had a collection of material that fit together to make a fine album. And we found the material, and we made a great record.
How are you and Alan Clark getting along as singing together?
Everything I ever learned about harmony singing, I learned with Alan. I've known him since I was 5 years old. That's 36 years, for God's sake, you know. It's a lot of fun, and that's all. I'm only really interested in having a good time, you know. I'm 41 years old now. I have no time for bummers. I have no time for negativity. I just am intent on having a fine time and making as many people happy as possible.
Well, now, the Hollies are actually playing Radio City Music Hall at the end of August in New York City. I wonder what the concert's going to be like and what kind of reaction you expect from the audience, given that, as you've noted, your age and the amount of time you and Alan have worked together, you will be playing to many different generations.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. You know, this record was released 20 years to the month after our first hit record, and that's kind of a staggering record in itself. I believe that the music's vital. I believe it's very now. I believe that we will be received very well. I believe that... you see, the Hollies were always a very fine band live. We could always really sound exactly like our records, you know, live. It's going to be a lot of fun. There are a lot of unanswered questions. Maybe we'll talk after August and I'll tell you what it was like.
Well, what's happened to Terry Sylvester? Because, of course, he took over from you when you left the Hollies and emigrated, as it were, to America.
I don't know what's happened to Terry. I believe he's living in America. And I believe he's making a duo album with a guy from Bread, whose name escapes me right now. I think he's still making music. I believe that it's kind of, you know, it's hard to say that he took my job temporarily, because he was there for 12 years.
Crosby, Stills and Nash are appearing on the Rock and Roll Tonight Show, which is a video show in late July in America. Now, it's being billed as Stephen Stills, Graham Nash and the Crosby, Stills and Nash Band. Does that mean that David Crosby's not involved in it?
That's right. David, it was actually Stephen's show. We were asked to do a, Stephen was asked to do a show and I was asked to do a show. And it came at a point where we just didn't have time to do both shows, you know, to do them as well as we thought we could. So I decided that I would let Stephen have his show and I would come on and just do two or three things with Stephen. And that's how it worked out.
So David's not returning to America to play the concert with you then?
No, this has already been done. Yeah. We did it just before we came to tour Europe.
I know it's a delicate subject, but has he worked out his legal problems?
I believe that they are being worked out. It's a slow, painful process, you know. I believe he's taking care of them one at a time, you know, day by day, as he does. I sincerely hope that he comes out of it without too many scars.
Catching up with Rikers. Hang on a sec. Now that you are playing both with the Hollies, or about to play live with the Hollies, and of course you're currently on a Crosby, Stills and Nash tour, I wonder which of those two things you prefer, whether you enjoy them both for different reasons.
Yeah, exactly. I enjoy them both for different reasons. I can't take either one of them for too long, you know. Whenever I've worked, it's been an incredibly intense time, and you can only, you know, it's like isometrics. You can only, like David and Stephen, I can only work together for a period of a few months, and then we must separate, you know, out of necessity, to be able to take a breather and a rest, and then prepare yourself mentally for the next round, almost. It's kind of like a prize fight.
Well, back to the Hollies. Now, I understand that when you're playing on the tour, you will have a couple of members of Poco playing with you in the band. Who are they and why are they included?
The band has not been set up perfectly yet. If Paul Bliss does not play with the Hollies, who wrote seven of the tunes on the album, if he has prior commitments, then I'm going to ask Kim Ballard to definitely play. If they don't bring their own bass player, I'm going to ask another bass player to play. So we're not sure exactly what the band is yet.
Well, finally, now we're in Toulouse in southern France today. You've got several other dates in Europe before you arrive back in London. I guess for you it's a time to get back home. I know you live in America, and by the sound of you on microphone, you've lost a lot of your English accent, although the occasional words come out. Yeah. I notice they slip out.
I think one must adapt, you know. I spent so many years trying to order liver and onions, you know, and people not understanding what I was talking about. When you're immersed in a certain society, you must adapt. You must communicate, you know, and I guess I've lost a lot. See, I don't think I have to myself. You know, but I do notice that whenever I'm within 10 miles of England, my accent gets a lot thicker.
You said that you're over 40 now. I wonder, looking back over those years, whether you would have ever done anything else in your life other than play and write music.
No. I've had the most fantastic, miraculous, magical life of anybody I know.
And not the easiest people in the world to work with, from what you're saying.
That's right. Geniuses are not very easy to work with. And that's what it borders on that occasionally.
Are you ever frustrated? I know you look at the world and there are things in the world that you don't like seeing, and you write about those things, perhaps about the environment or the way the police take care of or don't take care of the younger generation. I wonder if you're frustrated that even though you write songs and they're bought on record by many thousands, maybe millions of people, the message still isn't getting right through to the people that are important to do something about it.
I think the thing that frustrates me is the time frame. I want it all to be put right now. And I've realized over my life that things don't get done now. They get done very slowly. For instance, in the anti-nuclear movement, of which we're very much an integral part, I've seen it go from a couple of thousand people to millions and millions of people in the space of about 10 years. Mm. So I don't get frustrated. I really believe that the points are getting listened to, and I really believe that slowly but surely the public is becoming more aware of what's happening. What frustrates me is the time period, because unfortunately with a thing like the nuclear arms race, nobody quite knows how much longer this is all going to last, you know? And so when I begin to look back and say, well, you know, we've worked hard for the last 10 years and we've helped make a lot of people more aware of what's going on, it could all blow up tomorrow. You know, we it was brought home very, very hard to us in Germany, where they're now fighting, you know, against the deployment of the Pershing 2 missile on German soil. They're worried. And the difference mainly between America and Europe is that America's never been bombed. You know, they've never had bombs dropped on any of their major cities. Europe, as you well know, has been bombed for many, 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 many years. And there's a vast difference. They are more scared here in Europe of the Holocaust that might happen than people are in America, purely because of personal experience.
French dog bark there. Yeah. He's agreeing with us. Back to the music again for a moment. Now, Crosby, Stills, Nash have a live album out and busily doing a tour. The album's doing well in America and it's making its mark around Europe. What's the next stage for you? Will you go back to your lives privately and write music again, or will you try and keep this band together for a few more years longer?
No, I have no interest in doing anything after this tour. I need a rest. I need to think about them. You see, this has been a three-year project. This is the most intense that we've worked for a long time. In the last 3 years, we did Daylight Again. We did two very successful tours. We did a number of very successful anti-nuke concerts. We did the No Nukes movie. We did the No Nukes albums. That was a triple album. We did the video show. We did the live album. We were doing the European tour. I've had it.
And you've got the Hollies?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly have got the energy to change my head slightly and be able to deal with the Hollies for a couple of months. But after that, I really need to take some time off and regenerate myself.
Do you think there's a possibility you might write something for a solo album?
I never really enjoyed making solo albums. I like to play with other people. I like to be a team member. I like to be a member of a band. The only time I've ever done solo albums is when there's been no one else to play with.
Perhaps finally, one message for your American fans that will be looking forward to seeing you in the Hollies coming up next month and a half's time. Perhaps a little message to them and how you feel about appearing in front of them in a different guise this time.
Well, I won't be in a different guise, of course. I'll just be the same Graham Nash. I'm really interested to find out whether the energy in the music that I know is there can be translated into live terms. And I really believe that the Hollies can do it. I really believe the Hollies are going to surprise a lot of people.
Thank you, Graham.